For the Marshalls, the combination of law and civil rights is the family business, and an illustrious family it is. Cecilia Marshall is the granddaughter of late Supreme Court Justice Thurgood Marshall. She's the director of general scholarships for the Asian Pacific Islander Scholarship Fund, and she was in Atlanta this weekend for the opening of the play Thurgood at Theatrical Outfit. Marshall spoke to City Lights host Lois Reitzis about her grandfather and how she found her own way of carrying on his legacy.
This is a one-man play based on the life of your grandfather. I know that you have seen previous productions. How do you react to seeing your grandfather as a character in a play?
I have been lucky to see it in two different formats, multiple times on Broadway with Lawrence Fishburne, and then recently out in San Francisco in the past year. So it first was a little alarming, I think, because it was Lawrence Fishburne on Broadway really was as close as I've seen to actually resembling my grandfather in terms of the mannerisms.
Wow.
I was a small child when he passed. I was 11. So it's, you know, it was a young age, but certainly every actor has been able to bring a piece of him. And so it's a little eerie, but I will say it's when I see my grandmother, who I'm lucky to still have with me, see the production, and she's seen it many, many times because it reminds her so much of him. And so to see her see the production every time, she just lights up because it brings back such fond memories of him and the times that they spent together. So it is, you know, highly accurate in resembling his mannerisms, and each actor has taken, you know, their take on it. But
yeah,
it's really fantastic to see. It brings him back to life.
How old is your grandmother?
She is 88 now. She's doing wonderful.
Wonderful. Well, that was quite a romance. I mean, it seemed throughout their entire life together, he was so proud of her and so quick to point out his affection and his admiration of her beauty, her smarts. It was fun reading about that. Well, your grandfather's intellect and his achievements certainly provide for a larger-than-life character study. What was he like out of the spotlight, even your impressions as a young girl?
As a child, you know, he didn't bring work home. I was lucky enough to spend lots of weekends. My parents had me spend weekends at the house when I was small. So I spent a lot of time with him at his home, and then also he would take me to the court, and he would take me to events. So everything was very much, you know, a loving grandfather, and, you know, and not much about his history and his work. You know, so I have learned a lot about his work, obviously, after he passed as an adult, and I'm always fascinated to learn something new. But as a grandfather, we spent a lot of time just hanging out. And I do always remember this one moment when he was in Philadelphia getting the Liberty Medal before he passed. He took the whole family. It was an amazing occasion. And at one point, we were either headed to the event or done with the event, and he was heading into the elevator. And typically at events, you know, he gets a lot of people would come try to speak with him. And so the elevator was full. And so I just said, oh, I'll catch the next elevator. And he actually asked someone, you know, that he didn't know to get out of the elevator to let his granddaughter in. So for me, it was a moment of, you know, he was very protective of me, and he would make sure that I was taken care of. So I always remember that moment. I mean, I'm sure that the person that was pushed out of the elevator wasn't pleased, but for me, it was just a moment of, amongst all of this celebration and all of this, you know, all of these people, that, you know, he remembered me standing
aww
there, you know, trying to get on this. So I think for me, you know, in terms of the public events, they aren't my favorite. So I really kind of love that, you know, he saw that I was being pushed out of the elevator because people wanted to be in the elevator to talk with him. But he just was like, you know, this is my granddaughter. She's going to come in the elevator. So for me, it seems very small, but it is a memory that I really vividly remember from my childhood before he passed.
Well, I should think it would be a bad badge of honor. If you're going to be asked to get off an elevator, that it's Thurgood Marshall who asks you to get off the elevator. The narrative of this play, and certainly his life, the narrative of his life provides an essential lesson in American history and, above all, in the legacy of civil rights. You mentioned that at the age of 11, you hadn't yet studied a whole lot in school about his achievements, but I'm curious about how these events, these milestone achievements such as Brown v. Board of Education, what the rest of us learn from reading history, how are these things talked about or told to you first in the Marshall household?
But in the household, we actually, he wasn't, my grandfather wasn't one to speak of the huge milestones. And then, my uncle and my father, the same, we're taught to be humble in my family and just to keep doing, the best you can. So a lot of what I learned, I did learn from reading in books. And then as I started to learn, that's when I started, I like to ask my grandmother questions about everything. And lately, also, it's been really nice to just kind of dig deeper into her history, because I think I originally, as I started growing up, would ask her lots of questions about my grandfather and about her interactions with, him being on the court and what it was like, because she would often talk about, hearing cases when he was on the court and visiting the court. But recently, it's also been about, her experience, which I think was highlighted recently for the opening of the Smithsonian Museum. So I've had a lot of wonderful time to talk with her, and I'm named after her, so I'm honored to be her namesake. And we're now to the point too where, I do ask my father, a lot of different questions, about his upbringing and how it was in the household. And we always have, we're, a bit of a funny, humorous family. So a lot of the stories have to do more with, funny stories about him cooking something in the kitchen or him taking them to, a football game. So, I try to focus on those with my family. And then I ask my grandmother about being at certain milestones.
Well, your grandmother was born in Hawaii of Filipino heritage. Your mother is white?
Correct.
And your grandfather, famous as the first African-American Supreme Court justice, this is a very rich, multicultural background you come from. As the descendant of someone whose work was monumental in the struggle for equality, what is your take on civil rights today, and does your multicultural background inform your opinion of it?
Absolutely. So, growing up, I was born in the 80s, so I'm relatively young. But even growing up, I was not around a lot of multiracial people that looked like me. And to this day, I don't, other than those related to me, I haven't met anyone that is also Filipino, African-American, and white. So I've always, struggled with my identity, being related to the first African-American Supreme Court justice. I think growing up, attending events, it was always expected that I would, maybe look the part per se. And so I would always struggle with feeling like I wasn't the right, didn't look what everyone wanted me to look when I showed up at things. So I did struggle with that. And I think everyone struggles with their identity and their place in society. But in terms of, civil rights and social justice, I work on the Gates Millennium Scholars Program at the scholarship fund that I work on, which supports African-American students, American Indian, Alaska Native students, Hispanic American, and Asian American and Pacific Islander students. So I was lucky enough to be around a lot of our scholars this weekend, and I looked around the room and just, came to grips with the fact that I had tried to be honest, I tried to avoid stepping into the legacy of my grandfather. Those were shoes that I knew growing up were ones that I couldn't fill. And that has a little bit more to do with my own self-perceptions of what I could or couldn't do. But those shoes were huge. So I was afraid to go into something that was in that same realm. So I did take a different path, you know, working in corporate advertising. But then I have found my way to working in scholarships and working with students of color that have financial need. So for me, you know, this is a social justice issue. This is a civil rights issue in terms of the education inequities that still exist in our society. So as I tried to stay away from trying to fill those shoes, I found myself really doing work that supports, you know, bringing some equity back into education and really support students that, you know, not too long ago wouldn't even have been able to attend these colleges that they're attending. So this weekend, looking in the room at college freshmen who are excited for their futures and just thinking, you know, of all the college they go to. And just, you know, for a moment, I was reflecting on my grandfather and the legacy, you know, that I have, and just thinking about, you know, the work he did in law made it possible for students to have the right to attend an institution. But now we're at that point where the financial need element and poverty within communities of color is really a social justice issue. And so we're not there yet. And I'm always reminded that something he used to always say is that this work is not done. You know, that decision was a milestone and was a huge step in changing the law, but we're still not there yet. There's still a lot of work to be done in terms of equity in the communities that we all live in.
Absolutely. There was an item on the official Thurgood Marshall website that really captivated my attention. In the bio portion, it says, Thurgood Marshall was America's leading radical. He led a civil rights revolution in the 20th century that forever changed the landscape of American society. But he is the least well-known of the three leading black figures of this century. Martin Luther King Jr., with his preachings of love and nonviolent resistance, and Malcolm X, the fiery street preacher who advocated a bloody overthrow of the system, are both more closely associated in the popular mind and myth with the civil rights struggle. I wondered if you feel he is under-recognized as among the three most important figures in civil rights history.
You know, we don't have any say in that statement. I would say that, you know, he did use the law, and the law was his way to make change. And that, you know, I think, you know, looking back, I don't think it's as important to think about a top three or who gets more attention over the other. I think it's more important that we focus on, you know, what's happening now and what all of them collectively have done to set up the future for the students that are going to be continuing this movement. And I think, you know, I'm reminded that my father and my grandfather and my grandmother always spoke that the true civil rights heroes and the true fighters were those that were in the towns, those that were left behind after the case. So they may have come in, argued a case, and those people that spoke up continued to live in those communities and continued to live in danger. And so the unspoken leaders and heroes of this movement are those people that spoke up but weren't large names and weren't large figures and get no recognition to this day. So I think he would also think of, if I had to say, think of those people and those that had that bravery without having a big title or any sort of recognition, you know, and those families that housed him when he needed a place to stay where there were no hotels in the South that would host him. And so those families put themselves on the line to give a room to someone coming in to fight the legal battle. So I think, you know, all in all, it's the most important people in the movement are those that don't get recognized that did step up, and those people that fought those battles at home and then continued to live in that community and continued to do the work after these big cases were done and after all of the big milestone events happened, that truly there are a lot of unspoken heroes.
Wow, that's a very impressive outlook, and certainly reflects humility, which no doubt seems to be passed along in the family as well. James Earl Jones originated the role of Thurgood, and you mentioned having seen Lawrence Fishburne on Broadway. That play, the Lawrence Fishburne performance as Thurgood, was performed just before President Obama's first election in 2008. In this election year, 2016, what do you think should resonate most from a play about the first African-American Supreme Court justice?
You know, when I saw the play back in 2008, I was living in New York City at the time, and was just so happy to be a part of our system and to vote for the first African American president. So I think, you know, I'm always moved when I think back to that time in 2008, and I mean, as we you know, close out this term, you know, it's bittersweet. I think it's amazing to have had him as a president, and I think what I look at, regardless of which way people will vote this year, what's important is that so many people have made it possible for us to have a vote. And it's really just the importance of what that right means and people having died for that right. And people still, you know, every day fighting to ensure that we have the right to vote. So I think the most important part of this election is to be engaged in whichever format someone chooses and to actively engage in the process, because we do control the process. We may forget about that as we think about one vote, but collectively it is our right. And I think it's certainly you know, something that people should be actively participating in. They, you know, it can be a troublesome time in the news, but I think it is still our right to vote. And I also, you know, hope that as we look at some of the other cases that are happening, that some of those rights are reinstated for those that that should be able to vote, that have served their time. It reminds me of a recent book that I read, The New Jim Crow, and just thinking about, you know, ensuring that people still do have that right to vote, and those that do certainly shouldn't take that for granted.
Our work's not done yet.
Not yet.
Cecilia Marshall, it's been a privilege. Thank you so much for talking with us.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
And look forward to seeing you in Atlanta.
Absolutely. Thank you, and have a good day.
Cecilia Marshall is Managing Director of Scholarships and Programs for the Asian and Pacific Islander American Scholarship Fund. She spoke with Lois Reitzes.